Good morning. So last time we talked about priority queues. The idea was that we would have things in some sorted order. Natural application is that we want to say it. Do things in order by what's most important first, and our sorting order would be that the most important has the minimum value. And a priority queue would be a data structure where you could quickly insert things with some priority and pull out the item with minimum priority. And we found out that we had one fast way of implementing them, which we called a binary heap, which was in some sense simpler than the more general data structures we learned before, like a binary search tree, especially a balanced binary search tree, which indeed can do priority queue operations quickly, but does more than that and does extra work in order to maintain the ordering over everything and not just let us find the first value quickly. And our binary heap had these two components. So first it was a binary tree, but it was a special kind of binary tree where we filled in the tree from top to bottom, left to right, like so. So our empty spaces were always on the bottom right. And this let us use this clever array implementation of a binary tree rather than having to maintain left and right and parent pointers. And we had this ordering rule, which was that the parent was always less than the child. And this let us know that the root element is always the minimum, so our find minimum operation was really simple. And for maintaining this property as we changed the binary heap, the basic idea was whenever we disrupted a node, we either swapped it with its parent or swapped it with a child in order to keep, make that property be true again. So we just look for going swapping up. We just say, is it actually less than the parent? Or is the parent actually less? And if not, we'd swap it with that. For going down, we'd say, is this actually greater than both of the, less than both of the children? And if not, we'd swap it with the least child. And through that operation, we could maintain this property. And we found out that based on what we were doing, we took log time to do our insert and our remove operation. So there's some other operations, which I mentioned earlier for priority queues in general that we might want, and we can think about how we do them in a binary heap. So one of this was changing the value of a key, changing the priority of an item that's already in the heap. So the most frequent form of this is you want to decrease the value, meaning you want it to be found as the minimum value sooner than it would otherwise be. And the basic procedure for this is that assuming you have a pointer to the node already, so somehow like our nodes, we have pointers from say programs we're running or packets we're sending through a network, we somehow have a pointer to a node in the binary heap, then we change the value and we do this swapping with parents and children process depending on whether we increased or decreased it. So if we had to find the value, this would be really slow if we don't already have that pointer because, well, while moving the value around isn't that bad, searching for it would involve searching the entire binary heap because binary heap, unlike a binary search tree, is not ordered in a way which lets us efficiently find something even if we already knew its key. But if we already know where the value is, that's, again, like all our operations, that's log time. And I alluded to, when I began, some variants on heaps that we won't talk about in this class, but the main reason that they're interesting to the theoretical community is that they can do this operation faster. They can do this in constant time or amortized constant time, which is nice for a theoretical point of view. We're not going to talk about them because, well, that's the main benefit you get, and they're a lot more complicated to implement to do that. And the difference between amortized constant time and log time is usually not worth a lot of complicated implementation. Sometimes it is. And that's why we're not worrying about it in this course. So another operation we might care about is removing an item. You know, we're running a program, it's ready to run, and we decide to get rid of it. And we don't want to later on encounter it from delete main. We want to get rid of it now. And if we have decrease key, well, we can definitely do that by just decrease key the item so it's the top of the heap, and then get rid of it from the heap using our usual delete the minimum operation. So that's all our binary heap operations. So we had our core operations, if you remember. We had insert, which was log time worst case. And we had this argument that it's probably better on average that if we assume we're kind of inserting keys that are in the middle of the range of values, they usually don't have to propagate all the way up on insert. They usually stay kind of near the bottom. But we can't guarantee that. The worst case pattern is definitely actually log time for each insert potentially. We had delete min, where we found the minimum quickly, but we had to swap with the bottom element and probably percolate it down mostly to the bottom even in our average case, because with our assumption that the big values are near the bottom, we were moving a value that was big to the top and then we needed to move it most of the way to the bottom. And then we had find min, which was constant time because we maintain this data structure. The work we're doing on insert and delete min is keeping the top of the heap, that place where we can just look up the first element of that array, and that's the minimum value. So before I move on, any questions about binary heaps? We're going to mostly talk about a particular application of binary heaps today. A couple applications. Okay, so one application of binary heaps is heap sort. So intuitively, the easiest way, if I give you a binary heap and I tell you use this to sort something, is while you have a delete min operation and you have an insert operation, you just insert a whole bunch of times and then find the min and delete it a bunch of times. And this is, it turns out, n log n. So this is asymptotically as good as something like a merge sort. But the reason it's interesting, and the reason why this is actually a sort algorithm people sometimes like using, is that with a more careful implementation, not this strategy, you can do it in place. And the basic idea is we know we represent our heaps as arrays, so we just treat the array we're sorting as one of those heaps. And by carefully managing the indices, I'm not going to go into all the details, but basically we say this part of the array is a heap, and we can, by being careful about what part of the array we choose, and it turns out choosing a max heap, so we start at adding elements to the end, so when we remove something, we place it in that slot we freed up in the array. We can use heap sort to do an in-place sort. And it's one of the better in-place sort algorithms, if that's something you really care about. And unlike, say, quicksort, it's deterministically log linear time. But in practice, something based on quicksort or merge sort, which you can do in place if you're careful, or mostly in place, if you're careful, I should say, is faster in practice. Okay. So the other big application we're going to talk about is compression. So compression, by which I mean I have some bunch of data, and I want to make it smaller. I have a 50 kilobyte web page. I want it to be a 5 kilobyte download, so it loads really fast, hopefully. You know, I have 100 megabytes of machine code somehow. I have this big executable. I'd like to have it be a 50 meg download. You know, or I have a movie where I have, you know, 24 1 megabyte pictures a second, and really that's not acceptable. If I want someone to download it, it probably should be like 10 megabytes a minute. Yeah. And it turns out that binary heaps are a good data structure for one of the more important steps in most forms of compression. But we're going to talk about compression generally, and we're going to talk about the specific case where this is used. But it turns out that this is a component of pretty much anything people do with compression, is both a use of heaps and a use of trees. So commonly we use lossy compression. This is the most noticeable kind of compression because, well, it's what you use for audio and video, which is the things that we care most about compressing because they're huge. Lots of data. And sort of the intuition behind lossy compression is like, if I have an image, you're not going to notice if I choose run random pixel in the image and make it 0.25% darker. There's just no way you're going to tell. And, you know, even if you could notice, well, there was noise when I took the picture originally. If I take a picture with a camera, the camera sensor isn't perfect. You know, it's not actually worth preserving all that information because, well, it wasn't really meaningful in the first place. And typically when we talk about lossy compression, what we're doing is we're coming up with this model of human perception. So we're having this idea that this is how I look at images. Here are the parts that I'm going to notice, and here are the parts I'm not going to notice. And we only write down the parts I'm going to notice. We take order the parts from most important to least important, and only write down the most important parts up to some threshold, depending on how small we want to make the image. And if you've seen like low quality video or, you know, images, you've seen the artifacts that happen when we're making this choice about what's a less important part of the image. But the idea is that if you choose this rate at an appropriate ratio, you can do only the important parts, you know, are going to be stored, but that's all humans are going to notice. No one will know that you're omitting a lot of information that technically was in the original image or video or audio. Okay. So the other kind of compression people talk about is lossless compression. And you might say, well, this seems entirely unrelated to that lossy compression, that type of compression that really works. But typically the structure of lossy compression algorithms is that when you're doing lossy compression, that first you write down the most important parts in a sort of human perceptual way, and then you apply some lossless compression to that. So once you've done that, often that's the next step, or you combine them in some ways like that. But with lossless compression, the idea is you want to reproduce the original file. And this we use for things like computer programs. If you have a computer program, it's not really acceptable to say you won't really notice if that's a NOP or an ADD instruction. Not an answer we can give. So we have to actually do the, you know, exact thing. And these rely not on some knowledge of what is going to be important, but patterns. So a text file has many more E's than exclamation points, for example. So we're going to choose a shorter way to write down E's than exclamation points. This is the intuition behind lossless compression. So that I'm going to find things which are common, and I'm going to find shorter ways of expressing them than the parts which are uncommon. And you can see how we could apply this to the lossy compression ideas we have before. You know, that if I have something which is common in my video, for example, like if I have lots of black frames, lots of black images in my video, well, I might want a more compact way of writing that down than other types of images in my video, for example. Another example is with images. So sometimes we losslessly compress images, like, you know, images that like have text on them and lines, like slides, let's say. And computer-drawn images usually have lots of white space. If you want to compress an image of this slide, then you probably want a more compact way of representing white parts of the image than non-white parts. So you might, for example, have a way to specify a big white rectangle instead of needing to write down this thing is white, this thing is white, this thing is white, all the way over the image. And when we're going to talk about an application of binary heaps and of trees, we're going to talk about not this part, but approaching this problem. So how do we choose shorter encodings for things which are more common? So that's the part of the problem we're going to be looking at as a preview. So, and this applies as part of many forms of compression. So the type of compression we'll be learning and doing eventually in a lab is not like what something like, say, gzip or zip uses exactly, but it's a component of those systems. So they typically do something first to rearrange the file so there's more patterns which work like this, and then apply the scheme we'll actually learn. So it's a real component, but of applying this, you know, intuition that we want more common things to represent as shorter, but in a real compression scheme, they do some additional steps because what we're going to do, it provides a lot of improvement, but you can do a lot better with a few extra steps that we're not going to talk about in this class. So I mentioned, sorry, compression, you know, so to give example of typical results. So for example, for lossless, you know, you can do like 4:1 for text and like 2:1 for audio, 2:1-ish for photographs, and about 5:1 to 20:1 for diagrams, like a picture of this slide. And this is versus the straightforward, you know, ASCII or value of each pixel representation. And for lossy, like for audio, you do about twice as good. And for video, you do about 1:40. But for lossy, like this is a guess based on what's close enough. So for our examples, we're going to mostly be looking at applying to this English text case. And as I said, we're going to be doing one part of the process, which is probably the most important part. But because it's only one part, we're not going to quite get 4:1, but we're going to get pretty good. And the idea is we're going to come up with a way of doing this intuition of choosing shorter encodings for things which are more popular and longer encodings for things which aren't. And the first thing we need is, well, what does an encoding of these different symbols look like? You know, how are we going to represent that? And we're going to choose a particular family of encodings. We're going to call a prefix code. And this is an example of a prefix code. So I have documents which have four symbols in them, A, B, C, and D. And I'm going to choose these codes for the symbols. And I've carefully chosen these codes, these binary strings, such that I don't need to represent when these letters of the code begin and end. If I see a zero, I can look at all the other codes and know, well, I'm done. This is an A, it couldn't possibly be anything else. If I see a one followed by a one, I know I'm done. Yes, there's stuff that starts with one, but it starts with 1, 0. I have to have a D, I can't have anything else. And if I see a 1, 0, I know, oh, I have one more character left, I need to look, one more bit left I need to look at. So this has the property that no code is a prefix of another. So this means that we can look at this bit by bit, and we can know when we're done and when we have a symbol, when we have a letter. So there's no ambiguity, and when I'm writing this down in the file, what I write down is just a sequence of bits. And real compression programs will, in fact, try to do this. And this is a little awkward to do in, say, C++, to have like your file just to be a sequence of bits because, well, these bits aren't going to line up with bytes in a very friendly way. And that's just an annoyance that real compression programs have to deal with, is that you have to read kind of in the middle of a byte. When we do a lab on this, we're going to kind of simplify things just for the purpose of the lab, but obviously you don't want to waste any space. So if you're writing this down to compress things, you're just going to cram these all in one byte, possibly overlapping in two bytes, and just have this sequence of bits. You look at next bit, next bit, next bit, look at the code, see, do I have a symbol yet? And you write down those symbols. So for example, if I have this string BAAACDA, I would write down B as 100, then A is 0, A is 0, A is 0, C as 101. That should be D. Well, we'll do, we'll take a, just correct that to a B since that's what I wrote. B as 100 and then A as 0. So we'd write down something like this. And we still have the property that if we want to go the other direction, we can just look, we don't need this, these separators. So I have these colors separating the different symbols, but in the file, we don't need them. We can just read this out and figure out what each thing is. So any questions about this type of code? Is the decompression what?
Is the decompression like algorithm assuming that the maximum length of the prefix code is 3 letters?
So the question is, the decompression code assume that the maximum length is 3 bits? And the answer is not in general. So the when we're using this to compress, what we're going to store is we're going to have our file. So our, you know, so this is our uncompressed file. And our compressed file is going to store the prefix code, so we're going to have some representation of this, followed by the actual bits. And if we write down a prefix code with longer symbols, well, our decompression program is going to be able to handle that. And it better be able to do that because, you know, if we want more than 4 symbols in our file, well, we better have more than 3 bits, probably. Yeah. And generally, we're going to want to choose these. So we have this important property here that hopefully we've somehow chosen the prefix code. So shorter codes are for more frequent values. And one thing we're going to talk about and one major application of heaps is and trees is choosing this such that we maximize how short the actual encoded part is. So when we're writing this as a compressed file, we have sort of this part here, which is the encoded data. We want to make that as short as possible, given that we're choosing these codes for each of our possible letters. We also have to worry about, well, we have to write down the prefix code. We're going to assume that hopefully our file is big enough that that's not a big issue. With this file, you might complain, doesn't seem big enough. And I said that this would be an application of trees. And the main way it's a nice application of trees is that you can think of prefix code as a case of binary trees. That when we're reading our file, we start here, we start at the top here. And as we read bits, we go down either the left for 0 or the right for 1 until we find a letter, a symbol. And we can represent every single prefix code this way. And this is a natural way of implementing the process of read a bit from the file, figure out what's happening. Figure out, you know, whether we have a new thing when we're decompressing. And when we're talking about building these prefix codes, we're going to be manipulating these trees. This is going to be the form in which we think of the prefix codes. Note that, like for binary heaps, we have this representation of trees, which was as an array without like explicit pointers. We could represent this tree as a table like this. Like, they're the same thing. You can do all the same operations on them. They just have different efficiencies. But they're equivalent. They're representing the same data. They're just different data structures for it. So in order to use this for a compression, we want to optimize, you know, the compactness of our representation. And what we're going to do that is we're going to look at the frequency of each of the letters in our input. And we're going to try to figure out, well, how many bits do we take up? And a way we're going to try to express that is we're going to take our frequency as sort of a percentage or a portion of our input. And we're going to compute the average number of bits, I'm going to say, per symbol. I'm going to call each part of our input a symbol. I'm going to compute the number of bits we need to represent the symbol. So if we think of ASCII, you know, straight ASCII encoding, everything's 8 bits. We could represent that as a prefix code because, well, our prefix tree just goes down 8 levels and has symbols all at the bottom. And it takes 8 bits per symbol. And we're going to look at our actual frequencies, and we're going to compute the mean number of bits per symbol. So with A, B, C, D, the straightforward encoding, so if we didn't know anything about the frequencies, we'd probably want to choose an encoding like this. Just everything is 2 bits. Like, we can just number, you know, A is 0, B is 1, C is 2, D is 3. That would be an encoding we could use if we knew nothing about the frequencies. But because we know that A is a lot more common than anything else, we want to make A short. And we know that D is a lot more common than B and C, so you're going to make D shorter. And to show that that has a benefit, we can use these frequencies to compute, you know, on average, how long or how much space are we taking for each symbol. In this case, we get 11/6 of a bit. So we've saved a whole 1/6 of a bit per symbol. So if we're doing this, we assume that versus this straightforward encoding where I just use 2 bits for everything, we're saving, you know, about, you know, like a little less than 10%. So we're going to talk later about how we define the minimum cost prefix code. So we have this notion of cost where we know the frequencies. How do we find the minimum cost code? And we're going to use this to implement compression. So our basic compression idea is going to be we're going to read a file, and we're going to do one pass over the whole file, find out what all the symbols are, which usually is going to mean ASCII characters, and we're going to find all their frequencies. Then we're going to choose the best prefix code, best in the sense of, you know, minimum cost, and we're going to assume we're just mapping each prefix code to one symbol. Like, you could imagine maybe I could do something smarter where, like, I have 0 represent the. If I'm compressing like a text file, we're not going to do that. We're just going to say each code gives us one letter, or one symbol, space, exclamation point, and so on. And this best prefix code is something called a Huffman code. We're going to compute that based on the frequencies. And we're going to write that prefix code to our output. So our compressed file is going to have our prefix code followed by the input file encoded using that. So our compression actually helping depends on this best prefix code being not just better than our naive code here, our 0001, but being quite a bit better, being enough better that this extra space here, you know, shouldn't matter given how much smaller the encoded version is. And this is something that real compression programs rely on. And you'll notice if you take a normal compression program and try to compress, say, something random, you'll get a bigger file. And this sort of issue is why. the chosen prefix code is just not better enough, even if it's slightly better than just representing the bits as is. So how are we going to find our best possible prefix code? So we're going to take advantage of this tree representation. And we're going to build that tree from the bottom up. So why are we building it from the bottom up? What's the reasoning behind doing this? Well, we know that the least frequent thing needs to be at the bottom in sort of an intuitive sense. Because less frequent things should have longer codes. Longer codes are going to be further down the tree. So we're going to use that first, since we're building from the bottom up. And then we're going to combine these less frequent things into a more frequent group of things. So we're going to group things together as we're building from the bottom up. We're going to take two less frequent things and treat them kind of together as one sort of combined symbol and work with these partial prefix trees. So we're going to say, for example, in the case where we have here, when we're building our tree, we're going to say, okay, B and C, they're going to both have long codes. So we're going to say that B is going to be, we're going to choose to be the one with N with 0, and C we're going to choose to be the one with ends with 1. So we're going to make that decision early, and later on we're going to figure out that it's 1, 0, and then 0, and 1, 0, and then 1. But we're going to decide early, these are less frequent, they're both going to have long codes. We're just going to put them together right now because we know that they're going to need to end up together. So we're going to work with these partial codes that are the end of our prefix codes. We're going to bind them together until we actually end up with the whole prefix tree incorporating all the symbols. So questions about these sorts of intuitions? So I'm going to go through some examples, obviously, because we'd not expect you to get this from this high-level description. So we're going to have this running example. We're going to compress this sentence. And our first step, as I said, is to compute the frequencies of all the symbols. So these are our symbols. Note that comma and space are symbols. And space is a very common symbol, as occurs in most text files. So we have these frequencies. And we're going to work with a priority queue of partial prefix trees. Because we want to take the least frequent thing, and because we're working with these partial prefix trees, that we're going to have a queue of partial prefix trees that we're going to work with. And we're going to use that to select the minimum thing, where our priority is how frequent something is. And we're going to take the two least frequent prefix trees, put them together into one prefix tree, and insert them back into a priority queue. And we're going to say that that combined thing has the frequency of the two components it had. So here's what we're going to start with. We're going to start with a list of partial prefix trees, and our prefix trees are going to be some very boring degenerate cases. So our initial prefix tree, let's think of a case where I am encoding a file where I have, only has the letter A in it. I don't need any bits to represent that. I just need to know the length of the file. So in our degenerate case, we're going to call this a prefix tree, though it really isn't. We're just going to say that we just have a single node which represents the letter. And we're going to say that's a zero-length prefix code. So sort of as a degenerate case. So in these cases, this prefix tree is B blank. B and nothing. And F and nothing. And we're going to eventually combine these into one big prefix tree that happens to be minimum cost. And we're also labeling each of these with the frequencies we looked up earlier. So B has frequency 1, space has frequency 9, which matches with the table we had here. And these frequencies are going to be our priority for our priority queue. So these are ordered by priority. So these are the ones we're going to use first, the ones with the lowest frequency, and the ones with the highest frequency are the ones we're going to use last. And this matches our bottom-up intuition. We want the lowest frequency things at the bottom. We want that 9 to be really near the top. We want that space to have a really short code. So we want to get it last so it's near the top of the tree. But B and F, we want to have a pretty long code because we don't have many of them. So we want them near the bottom of the tree. And what we're going to do is we have these partial prefix trees in our priority queue, and we're going to take two. We're going to call delete min twice to get, in this case, B and F. So we're going to take B and F, and we're going to combine them into a new actual prefix tree. So no longer are we going to have this weird degenerate case where we have, B is represented by nothing. Now we have B is represented by 0, F is represented by 1. So we combine them into that tree, and we need to choose a frequency. And our frequency is going to be that the frequency of the combined prefix tree is the sum of the frequencies of the things we built it from. So there's going to be some sequence of bits we're going to see, and then we're going to see a 0, and it's going to mean B. We're going to see a 1, and it's going to mean F. So that's the decision we've made by doing this. We put this back in our priority queue because later on, we're going to want to combine this BF little sub-prefix tree, with another one to make that decision about where do we look for a 0 to mean B. And we just keep repeating this process. So next we have M and P at the top of our priority queue. And we combine that. And we get another of these partial prefix trees. So these are two things which are going to ultimately be at the bottom of our combined one big prefix tree. And we just keep going until we eventually have everything combined together. So next we have U and comma, which we combine into another two-node tree. And then we take the next two things off our priority queue. And the next two things are not single symbols anymore, but now we have these two partial prefix trees. We have one with frequency 2, another with frequency 2. So we have U and comma M and P. We combine them together. Our frequency of that symbol is 2 plus 2, 4. We have 4 kinds times where all the symbols in this big tree, this partial tree, appear. And we combine them into this partial tree. We take one side, put it on the left, one side, put it on the right, which we can make arbitrarily. We could do either way. We got the same length of prefix code, even though it would be a different prefix code. And we put that in with 4, and we still have some more steps to go. So, any questions about this process we're using to build up this tree? Yes?
Why would you add up like 1 plus 1 what's the
point? Here, so for U and comma, why does it become 2? So this is the frequency of symbol frequency. So here, this means there's 1 U in input. And here, this means there's 2 B or F in input.
So you just
add
up the frequency?
So every time we combine two. So we start out with the frequencies equal to the frequency in the file. Every time we combine two things together, we add up their frequencies. We want the frequency of everything that this tree represents. The idea is it says, how much are we going to use this part of our ultimate prefix tree? Okay, so we're going to keep going. So we have our B and F and E, so we can combine things which are not the same shape, and that's fine. That's how we have different length encodings for different things. So here we ended up with BF, which is a two-node little prefix tree. We decided to put that on the left side, and we have E, which we decided to put on the right side. And we ended up with this little prefix tree here, where we're saying that E has a 1-bit representation, B and F have a 2-bit representation, and that's perfectly fine. And this is how we're getting our compression, is that we have different lengths for different levels of commonness, and E is more common, so it gets a shorter encoding. And this is where we're making that happen. So we do that. We also end up combining O and S to this tree. And we keep going, and eventually we get these big things that we put together. We have our two four-frequency things, one inside we put on the left side, one we put on the right. We have another two four-frequency things, one on the left side, which is this big subtree here, one on the right, which is this single symbol. That's still fine. T is very common in what we're compressing, so we want to have a really short encoding versus everything, this U, M, and P, which have a much longer encoding. And again, each time we do this combining, well, we add up the frequencies. So here we have a frequency of 8, so it ends up going after our 5, which is still in our priority queue. So we keep doing this process. So we combine this single I and 8 together. And eventually we combine these two things with frequency 9, so our space and this big subprefix tree with U, M, P, and T. And then we eventually have only two things to put together. We put them together and we get this big combined prefix tree. So we just keep doing this until we end up with one prefix tree. So we have a priority queue of trees, which I think what confuses people most about implementing this is that it's not a queue of symbols, it's a queue of trees, which you'll commonly represent as a binary heap. So you'll have a heap, which is a tree, where the nodes are trees. And that's something, yep, you can do that. There's nothing prohibiting you from having trees where nodes contain trees. So we end up with this tree, and we can write down what the symbols are. So we say, if we go 0, then 0, we have a space. If we go 0, then 1, we have a T, and so on. We can just go through this tree and write down all the possible symbols and their encodings, and we have our prefix code. Now, if we're actually decompressing, we probably actually prefer to work with this tree form. Though as a human, you might find it easier to read this, maybe. Okay. So this is the prefix tree we got. So something I'd like to note is that this is not the only prefix tree you could get. So we could have also have made some other choices. So for example, here, at this point, when we were building our prefix tree, we had a whole bunch of things with frequency 2. And our priority queue doesn't say what order those things with the same priority, the same frequency, are going to end up in. And we don't care. We're going to get a prefix tree which is as good no matter what. But yes, it's going to be a different prefix tree. We would have different encodings, that they'd be the same number of bits, but they'd be different bits if we made different decisions. So there are multiple answers, but they all have the same length code for every symbol. And that's fine. We also had a choice to make that when we combine two things, when we combine, in this case, the two blue things together, We could have put the O on the right side or the left side. That's another choice we could make, which changes the code we get. But it doesn't change the length of each of the symbols. And you can prove, but we're not going to do it, that this algorithm gives you a minimum cost tree. That every tree you get out is a minimum cost one. Yes, there are multiple minimum cost trees, as long as the symbols for each symbol has the same length code. You know, you can make a bunch of other trees which do that. That's fine. So I talked about the algorithm sort of with pictures informally. So what does sort of a pseudocode implementation look like? So, you know, what I might do is I might have a class to represent my prefix tree, and I have just a bunch of convenient constructors. So I have one which gets my degenerate case of my zero length prefix tree, my prefix tree with one node, where I'm saying you don't need any bits to represent this, where I just keep track of the frequency, too, because that's how I'm going to sort them. And then I have one where I combine a right and left side, and one where I have just a copy constructor. And so I'll have a priority queue of trees. This might be represented with a binary heap, for example. And the order of prefix trees is going to be based on the frequency. So we have, you know, an operator less than, which is, you know, return the frequency is less than other that frequency. That's what our ordering looks like. So given that our delete min operation is going to return the least frequent of the prefix trees, and so we just insert this initial prefix tree for everything, that one node thing, and then we, while we have stuff in our queue, we remove two things, make a prefix tree that puts them together, one on the left, one on the right side, doesn't matter which you choose for which, add that to the queue until we have a queue of one item, and then we just take that one item off the queue, off the priority queue, and that's our prefix code. So, questions about this pseudocode? So that's the basic algorithm, and once we have this, we need to do our next steps in our compression. So these steps, if you remember way back, we said is that we have to write the prefix code to the output. So we're going to need to write this down in our file, and then we're going to need to read the file later on, read the file and use the prefix code. So for writing it down, we're going to have you do some labs where you implement this. And we've chosen a very bad format for writing down the prefix code. And this is a very bad format because, gosh, that's probably not going to save space unless you have a really big file. But if the input file's big enough, yes, it will save space. But real compression formats obviously don't do this. They don't just write out something which is this long to store that. They have a much more compact way of writing it down. We're not having you do that, mostly just for debugging reasons. Like, you would not like to debug a compact binary encoding of a tree if you get it wrong. Like, it's much easier if you can just read a text file and say, okay, does this make sense? You can do this by hand. That wouldn't be the case if we had you do a production-worthy encoding. And then our next step is to write out the data. So we're going to take our prefix tree here, and we're going to iterate through it to say, well, we're going to look at each symbol, and we're going to look at, you know, either this table or the prefix tree, you know, somehow to find where is the symbol, what's the encoding for it, and keep going. So from this table, it's fairly simple. You could like put it in a hash table, for example. You look up, what's my character? It's an M, okay. This is the bits I write down. What's my character? It's a comma, and so on. You just do that process where you build this table, and you look up a character, and you write it down. And the next question is how you write it down. In the lab, to keep things debuggable, we're going to have you write it down in text. So we're going to have you write down 0, 1, 1, 1. Obviously, in a real application, you write it out as a sequence of bytes where you used every single bit of each byte. So you have 8 bits per byte. You set each bit one after the other. The reason we're not having you do this in lab is that, well, it's just a whole bunch of extra work that is straightforward, but annoying to do. You know, you have to keep track of where am I in this current byte. You have to deal with what if my symbol overlaps 2 or 3 bytes. You have to deal with all those cases. And also, it's a lot harder to debug. If you get it wrong, you're looking at this binary file and trying to figure out what's going on. So just for not doing that, we have you to have you work with this text format. And that's what our examples are going to use in the lab and possibly later on. Next time. So next time we'll finish up talking about Huffman codes and move on to graphs probably.